jumbled, or mixed up, making it clear that the translation program is not 100% accurate. But even with the occasional misplaced word, I recognize the document immediately. I've seen it before. I realize that I'm holding my breath, that my fingers have clenched the papers tight enough to wrinkle and bend them. I'm rooted in place, disbelief and fear, shutting down my much-needed motor functions. I'm holding in my hands a copy of the notes my father took on the guard's inheritance. Tacked onto the end is the address of the John Hancock Center. Chapter 31. I burst out of the workshop, the door sharply clanging behind me. My palms are sweating, almost like the documents I'm holding are radiating heat. My mind races. What would the Mogadorians be doing with copies of my father's notes? How would they even have gotten them? I think back to dinner that first night, when my dad laid out the details of his long Mogadorian imprisonment. I remember some of the guard seeming suspicious, especially when my dad talked about the tinkering the Mogadorians did with his mind. Nine even came right out and said that it could be a trap. But that wasn't possible. He's my father. We could trust him. I race down the hallway to my dad's room. I'm not even sure what I'm going to do when I find him. Confront him? Tell him we need to get the hell out of here? His room is empty. I find myself taking a quick glance around. Not even sure what I'm looking for. Some kind of Mogadorian communicator? A Moog English dictionary? Nothing looks out of the ordinary. There has to be a rational explanation for this, right? Hadn't I seen with my own eyes the kind of literal mind games the Mogadorians are capable of? I'd seen Adam use a legacy that was apparently the side effect of the Moogs ripping out the memories from a dead guard. Even now, John and Ella were comatose thanks to some telepathic assault perpetuated by Cetricus Ra. The Mogadorians held on to my dad for years and ran unspeakable experiments on his mind. Was it really outside the realm of possibility that the Moogs could have brainwashed him? My dad might not even be aware they're controlling him. They might have done something to his brain and then let him escape on purpose, knowing that he'd be more valuable out in the world, gathering intelligence. The Moogs could have programmed him in a way that he's secretly reporting to them while he sleeps. I remember reading something about how double agents could be hypnotized into forgetting their own subterfuge. Was that a real article or a comic book? I couldn't remember. Back in the hallway, I yell, "Dad, where are you?" I try to keep my voice normal and steady, because what if he is a Mogadorian spy? I don't want to tip him off.
"In here,"
my dad yells back from Ella and John's room. My dad, the alien spy? Come on, get a grip, Sam. That's the kind of conspiracy theory I might have found in They Walk Among Us. It's ridiculous. More importantly, I know in my heart that it isn't true. So why do I feel so nervous? I stand in the doorway to Ella's room, clutching the translated documents. Sarah has gone to her own room to get some sleep, so it's just him and Bernie Kosar standing watch over John and Ella. BK is curled up, asleep. My dad, idly scratching behind his ears. "What is it, Sam?" he asks. My dad must know by my wide-eyed look that something's wrong. He leaves BK and walks towards me. But I find myself stepping instinctively backwards into the hallway. I'm keeping a safe distance from the loving father who rescued me from a prison cell. Great. I thrust the documents at him. "Why would the Mogadorians have these?" He flips through the papers, turning the pages more rapidly as he realizes what they are.
These are my notes.
I know. How did the Mogadorians get their hands on them? He must realize the implication of my question, because a hurt expression briefly clouds his face.
"Sam, I did not do this,"
he says, trying to sound convincing, but there's a note of uncertainty in his voice. "Can you be sure? What if they did something to you, Dad? Something that you don't remember?"
"No. Impossible," he says, shaking his head, almost as if he's trying to convince himself. I can tell by his tone that he doesn't truly believe it's impossible. In fact, I think he's frightened by the thought. Are the originals still in my room? Together, we run back to his room. The notebook is on his bureau, right where it's supposed to be. My dad flips through it, like he's looking for some sign it's been tampered with. His features tighten, like they do when he's trying to remember something. I think he's realizing that he can't trust himself, that the Mogadorians could have done something to him. He turns to me with a grim look on his face. If my notes have gotten into Mogadorian hands, we have to assume this place is compromised. You should arm yourself, Sam. Sarah, too. What about you? I ask, my stomach turning over. I can't be trusted, he stammers. You should lock me in here until the guard return.
There has to be another explanation, I say, my voice cracking. I'm not sure if I really believe that, or if I just want it to be true.
I don't remember leaving, he says. But I suppose my memory isn't worth much at this point.
He drops heavily onto the bed in his room. He folds his hands in his lap and stares down at them. He looks defeated somehow, undermined by both his mind and his son. I start towards the door.
Look, I'm going to go get Sarah and some guns.
But I'm not going to lock you in here. Just stay here, okay?
Wait. He stops me, holding up a hand. What is that?
I hear it too. A low, rumbling sound coming from the drawer of his nightstand. I get there first, flinging open the drawer. It's the phone he was using to communicate with Adam. The screen is lit up. A phone call coming in from a blocked number. In the corner of the screen, I see that the phone has 19 missed calls. I hold it up to my father. His face lights up, but I feel increasingly nervous. Too much is happening all at once. Feels like the walls are closing in on me. I hit the button and press the phone to my ear, my voice shaky.
Hello?
Malcolm!
The breathless voice on the phone shouts.
Where have you been?
This is Sam, I correct. A feeling of dread rising in my stomach as I recognize the voice.
Adam, is that you?
My dad jumps up and squeezes my shoulders, excited that Adam is still alive. I wish I could feel relieved. But the way he sounds on the phone, it's like more bad news is on the way.
Sam! Sam! Where's your father?
He's...
Never mind. It doesn't matter.
He shouts.
Listen to me, Sam. You're in Chicago, right? The John Hancock Center? How did you know that? They know, Sam!
Adam yells.
They know, and they're coming for you!
Chapter 32. Hold on! We all lurch to one side as Nine haphazardly steers our fanboat. Exactly what it sounds like, a small boat propelled by a giant fan on the back, around an overturned log floating in the murky brown swamp water. Eight nearly loses his balance and has to grab on to my arm to steady himself. He flashes me a sheepish smile as he lets me go to swat a mosquito. The air is thick and humid, buzzing with insects that can be heard even above the roar of our boat's propeller. This place smells of rich soil, of nature overgrown. Look at that! Eight shouts to be heard over the boat. I peer over the side to where a massing of lily pads is disturbed by something drifting through the water. At first, I think it's another log. But then I notice the rough scales of a tail swaying across the water, and know it's an alligator. Keep your hands inside the ride, Eight yells. I watch as the alligator disappears into an outgrowth of trees to our left. I can see why Five thought the Everglades would be a safe place to hide his inheritance. It's a maze of tall grasses and muddy water, deserted except for the bugs and the lurking animals. We're traveling down what is basically a road in the water, a place where the dense sawgrass and trees that sprout up on either side of us part to allow boat traffic. Not that there's anyone else out here. We haven't seen a single human being since picking up our boat from the rental place an hour ago. Even that was just a ramshackle cabin stuck between the end of a country road and the edge of a swamp. We had our pick of three rusted fan boats lashed to the rickety dock. The solitary man living out there, sunburned and smelling like a combination of alcohol and jet fuel, hiccuped his way through a tutorial on boat operation before accepting some cash in exchange for a dog-eared map of the area and the keys to the boat. He didn't ask any questions, which we were all thankful for. It's the local man's map that Six is concerning herself with. She's comparing it to the map of the Everglades that we printed off the internet, the one Five marked with the location of his chest. She keeps switching between our map and the smudged but more detailed map of local tributaries and bayou backwaters. She holds the papers away from her, annoyed. "I can't make sense of this," she grumbles.
"Don't worry about it," Nine replies, steering us forward towards the sunset. "Five said he knows where we're going. Let him be useful for a change."
I glance to the sky, looking for Five. He flew off about 15 minutes ago, claiming he could better find his chest from above. The edge of the sky is starting to turn a shade of pink that I'd normally find beautiful, but out here seems somehow ominous.
"I don't mean to sound like a chicken," I say warily, pushing a wet strand of hair behind my ear, "but I seriously don't want to be out here after the sun sets."
"Me neither," adds Eight, flicking the map in Six's hands. "Especially if our esteemed navigator doesn't know how to get us back to civilization."
Six narrows her eyes at Eight, but doesn't reply. Nine just laughs. Huge sweat stains darken his shirt and bugs buzz around him incessantly, but he doesn't seem to notice. In fact, Nine seems to be enjoying this. The humidity, the stickiness, the sense of danger. It's his natural element.
"I was thinking we might go camping after," he says.
Eight and I groan. If there weren't alligators drifting around in the water beneath us, I'd definitely take this opportunity to splash Nine. I look to the skies again, keeping my eyes peeled for Five. "I'm sure he'll be back soon," I say. There's no reason not to be optimistic. So far, this mission has run smoothly with no sign of any trouble. I still don't feel right about leaving John and Ella behind, but the others were right. There's nothing we could do for them in Chicago. I haven't quite reached the levels of enthusiasm Nine has, but it definitely feels better to be out here doing something, searching for a way to help our friends and win this war. Just as long as we don't get lost in this swamp. No good could come from that. A shadow passes overhead. Five. He hovers over the boat for a moment before gently dropping down beside us. He's dripping sweat, his white t-shirt soaked through. Nine snickers.
"Probably gonna lose some weight if we hang down here long enough, huh, big boy?"
Five grits his teeth, pulling his wet shirt away from his body self-consciously. We're all sweaty and gross, but for some reason, Nine just can't resist picking on Five. I had dared to hope that maybe the game of capture the flag helped them work out some of their issues, but there's still tension festering between them. "Ignore him," I say to Five. "Did you find your chest?" Five nods, pointing in the direction we're already going. "There's a patch of solid ground about a mile farther. It's there." Nine sighs. "Why didn't you just grab the chest and fly it back here, man?"
5 smirks at 9. You didn't listen to the plan, did you? We voted that you should handle all the manual labor and grunt work. Huh? Confused, 9 looks over at 8. Is he serious? 8 shrugs, playing along. 6 makes an exasperated noise. Just drive the damn boat, 9.
Aye, aye, Captain, 9 says, wiggling his fingers. One chest coming right up.
6 turns her gaze to 5. She's been more quiet than usual.
Why didn't you just grab the chest? She asks sharply.
5 shrugs. It's getting dark, and it's a good place to rest if we need to.
See? 9 shouts, delighted.
Camping!
No way, says 8, shaking his head vehemently.
Drive this thing faster so we can get out of here.
9 accelerates the boat, spray kicking up over the side as a result. I guess where 5 leads us could charitably be described as an island. Really, it's just a pile of mud in the middle of the swamp. The support system for one massive and gnarled tree that looks like it has been growing since the dawn of time. The tree's roots are so huge and outstretched that 9 has to drive the boat up cautiously, not wanting to get stuck on any of them. We climb out of the boat, our feet squishing through mud and slipping across the uneven protrusions of the tree. There's a ring of tall grass growing from the water around us, and the tree's branches above are so numerous and thick that the entire little island is thrown into shadow almost as soon as you step on it. It's actually almost 10 degrees cooler here than it was on the water.
This is actually a pretty great spot, I tell 5.
5's chest puffs out a little at the rare compliment.
Yeah, I camped here one night.
This old tree is amazing. Figured I wouldn't have any problems finding it again.
Congratulations, grumbles 9, swatting at a bug on his neck. So where's your damn chest?
5 leads us right to the base of the tree. Under our feet is a complicated lattice of roots. It's like the tree is a fist plunged into the earth, and the roots are its fingers, mud squeezing out from in between the tree's tight grasp. 5 kneels down under a knot of roots, a place where they've bunched up a bit, almost like a knuckle. He reaches underneath the roots, where a soft pocket of mud waits.
It's under here, 5 says, feeling around. Almost got it.
The mud makes a wet sucking noise when 5 pulls the chest free, as if it's reluctant to give up our prize. 5 kneels in front of it, wiping muck off the familiar wooden surface. 8 taps on my shoulder and points to a place where the tall grass is parting. I can see the flat head and yellow eyes of an alligator. Maybe the same one as before.
Looks like someone's hungry, 8 jokes.
Is he following us? I ask, partly kidding around, but also a little creeped out. I inch closer to 8.
Lots of gators down here, says 5 absently, hefting his chest up.
You talk to animals, don't you? I ask 9. Tell that beast we don't want any trouble.
Maybe I'll keep it as a pet, or make a sweet-ass coat out of it, 9 replies, squinting as he focuses on the approaching animal.
Something in his face suddenly changes.
Hold up!
A second alligator's head appears next to the first, and then, seconds later, a third head also emerges from the muck. At first, I think we're being stalked by a pack of gators, if such a thing is even possible. But then, the three heads rise out of the water as one. A thick, scale-covered neck connecting them all to a single body. The scales disappear beneath a soaked coat of oily black.